Long ago, the world was nothing more than an endless sea, cloaked in a boundless sky, reaching as far as could possibly be imagined. Then two great titans came into existence. And the Maconis. Titans were locked in a timeless battle. Until at last, only their lifeless corpses remained.
Welcome, everyone, to the N-Express podcast. I'm Ricky D, for those of you who listen to the podcast on a regular basis. As you can tell, Tim is not here yet, and Patrick is not going to be hosting this week, but I have two very special guests to help me talk about Nintendo. Guys, introduce yourselves.
All right, I'm Campbell. I'm Campbell Gill, the indie games editor at Goomba Stomp, and I'm excited to be back on the podcast. I've been few times before, like months ago, I think. So good to be back.
I'm Mark Helleroff. I'm the games editor at Goomba Stomp, and this is technically my second time, although technically also my first for the podcast.
Right, Mark. So the last time you were on the show, it didn't record. We had a technical glitch. So I'm sorry about that. And also, I just realized the last time you hosted the show, I told you I was drinking beer. And once again, I'm drinking beer. I don't want you to think I'm an alcoholic. It's just really, really, really hot in Montreal. It is 39 degrees, which I think in the States equals to like 100 plus. 100, what's 39 degrees Celsius versus Fahrenheit?
Oh, God. I don't want to sound like an idiot. I think like 97.
Yeah, it is really hot. And my AC broke down, and I just need to cool off. But I asked you to come on the show for many, many reasons. First of all, you were lucky enough to get a review code for Xenoblade Chronicles, the Switch edition. You reviewed it over on our website, goombastomp.com. So, Mark, should people be excited?
Yes. But, there's one thing. They shouldn't be excited for Future Connected.
Now, Future Connected is the additional story added on. But from my understanding, you do not have to play the additional story. It's tacked on at the end of the game?
Yeah, you don't. In fact, before you even start it, they give you like three warnings not to play it if you haven't played the base game yet. Because the opening cutscene is literally a recap of the final cutscenes in the base game.
So where do we start? Do we start with the good or the bad?
For which one? The base game or Future Connected?
Well, no, hold on a second. I thought the bad was Future Connected and the good was the base game.
Future Connected's the bad part.
Okay, let's talk about the base game, because that is what everybody's interested in. So you've played the original on the Wii, right?
Yes, I played it on the Wii. Okay. And then I played it on the 3DS, and then they brought it to the Wii U Virtual Console. It wasn't really Virtual Console, but it was like the Wii ports that were like 10, 20 bucks each. So then I played it on there. So this is my fourth time playing the game.
You've played this game four times, and I'm assuming you've put in about like 100 hours each time into playing the to play the game in order to finish it?
Yeah, basically.
Wow. Okay. And I thought I was crazy putting in 400 hours into Animal Crossing. Okay. So why should I, someone who's only played about 10 hours of the original game because my ex took my Wii and I never got a chance to finish it, why should I put in my hard-earned money to buy this game once again for the Switch, which is now, what, 10 years old?
I mean, you should have bought the Wii back like 7 years ago to finish it. That's just my opinion, though. I mean, here's the thing. I think it's the best narrative-driven title Nintendo's ever put out. Because it has this flow to it, and it's very cinematic at times, but it's just that the characters in it, they feel a lot more relatable than anything else that's ever been developed for a Nintendo game, and I really like that about it. But, well, I don't want to talk about the plot, because it's going to be hard, because then if we spoil something, I'm going to, you know, be upset for someone who hasn't played the game before, because there are basically spoilers, like, 30 minutes into the game that are hard to talk about.
Right, for anyone who hasn't played the game. But in terms of, like, in terms of the control, the gameplay, I mean, like, this game was made for the Wii, which had a completely different control set than what we have on the Switch, clearly. In terms of the graphics, the way it plays, like, how does it compare to the Wii? Would you say it's better?
It's all definitely better. The first Switch game, it definitely has problems. Especially if you're going to play this game in handheld mode, I wouldn't really recommend it, but I would at the same time. It just really depends. Like, it's definitely better than the 3DS version. I mean, of course it's going to be, but it still has some problems.
But here's the thing. So you said not to play it on handheld mode. And my problem, my issue with this is a lot of people, a lot of my friends I know, have recently decided to finally buy a Switch, only they decided to buy the Switch Lite, which means they have to play it on handheld mode. And to me, like, this is the kind of game that I would not want to play in handheld mode. It just seems too big, too epic, too large in scale, and I think I would get lost in not only like the graphics and the quality, but I don't know, it does not seem like it's a game I would recommend to someone who only has a Switch Lite.
It's funny because I would say the same thing, but the thing is that this game is so long that I would recommend it to a handheld player, but the thing is that I can't recommend it at the same time. Unless if they like pat, like, it's honestly, it's not bad to play in handheld mode. It's definitely miles better than Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and Torn of the Golden Country, but it's still just not there yet. Like, the game runs at 540p to, I think, 340p at times. There's resolution dips. The only thing they fixed this time, really, is the frame rate never really dips, which is good because Xenoblade 2 has some major problems in some areas.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, because, like, the Switch has basically enabled me to play RPGs to the end, you know, because playing these 50, 60, 70 hour games is kind of unfeasible when you're stuck in front of the TV a lot of the times, at least for me when I'm busy and stuff. So it sucks to hear that it's a bit tricky, or it's not the best it could be on portable.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll definitely patch it in the future. I don't think it's going to stay the way it is, but obviously how much could they patch it is the question. So we'll see, but
I never remember.
It's definitely playable, though.
They didn't patch Xenoblade Chronicles 2 or Torna, right?
They patched it a few times, but they definitely, well, 2 they did little work to. It definitely, no matter what they did, it just wasn't helping. And then when Torna the Golden Country came around, they made a lot of fixes, but it still wasn't good enough. But this is just, like, completely different. Like, the problem with the 2 and Torna was that you had, like, the sharpness filter in the handheld mode, and it just looked so weird at times. It looks so grainy, but they took the sharpness away, so now it kind of looks like what you'd play on the docked mode, except it's in a lower resolution, which can be, you know, just not pleasing on the eyes at all times. There are certain points in the game, though, where it looks gorgeous, like Valak Mountain and even Colony 9 at the beginning. They look phenomenal still in handheld mode, but then you have places like Gower Plains where it's like, it's really hard to tell what you might be looking at in the distance. And this is a game where there's such an awe factor to it, where the second you get a Bionis leg or Bionis knee, you can see other parts of Mechonis and Bionis, and just like the scale to it, where it's just ginormous and it's just cool to look at, which you don't get that factor in the handheld mode.
Would you recommend the game to someone who might have played Xenoblade 2 on Switch but wasn't a fan?
Yes. I just talked to my older brother. He did not like Xenoblade 2, but I told him he has to try the first one, because the first one, it's an entirely it's okay. So people compare the combat systems differently. Personally, from my point of view, I think it's entirely different based on the system, because Xenoblade Chronicles 2, it's more so you rely on like four different buttons and the analog stick, where Xenoblade Chronicles is they give you all these arts and you have to choose which one to use at which time, which I think is personally more engaging, since there's a way to mix up your strategy and you can play as the different characters, which helps, and each character has different arts, which is just like the second game. But the thing is, when you have to work with eight arts rather than perhaps like three or four with two, there's a lot more interesting scenarios with it. And the story is just like way better. And the visuals actually are, you know, consistent. Like Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is a mess from beginning to end, especially when you get up to about when you're like level 20, 30. There's some characters that come into play and they just look like they're from an entirely different game, and just nothing in those games was pleasing to look at, in my opinion.
Yeah, so my problem with Xenoblade 2 is I just couldn't not get into the story. I also think that the game itself dragged. Like, I remember when we discussed it on the podcast, I had played about 15 hours, and I would say about 10 out of 15 hours were spent watching cutscenes. And I'm like, I like cinematic cutscenes in video games. A lot of people do not. I do. I just don't want to watch 10 hours of cinematic cutscenes.
Yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles definitely has a lot of cutscenes, but there's more combat. And the best part about it is that the amount of tutorials in the second one was like ridiculous. But here, I mean, there's rarely ever a tutorial. By the time you reach level 50, there's going to be no more. But by that time, when they introduce new tutorials, it's usually for a character that they introduce. And since there's, I don't want to say how many playable characters, just in case for people listening. But yeah. It really, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, the problem with it is that they're always teaching you new things and they're never expanding upon what they introduce. And then other times they don't even explain to you something that's been introduced to the player since the first few minutes. And then you find out about it hours into the game and you're like, well, that could have saved me an hour or two.
Campbell, have you played both games?
Okay. So I have the wrong history with Xenoblade. I played them in the wrong order, I think, because the only one I played all the way through is Xenoblade Chronicles X on the Wii U, which I know is like the black sheep of the series to some people. So that was the only one I played through. And I really enjoyed it for what it was, actually, even though it infuriated me in so many ways.
The ant size text.
Yeah, you could not read like the descriptions of the arts or like any notifications that would come up during the like in gameplay. It was like so tiny. And also, I know we were just talking about like Xenoblade Chronicles 2 having too many tutorials. I think the Xenoblade Chronicles X had too few. You literally had to
understand
what was going on. And I feel like for a game that was released in like 2015, having to read a manual is kind of, you know, archaic. So, yeah. And then, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I didn't play Xenoblade Chronicles 2 because I had a problem with the complexity of Xenoblade Chronicles X and how badly it explained everything. And Xenoblade Chronicles 2 just looked like it was taking the complexity and then knocking it up a notch, you know? So I've long thought about the first game and really wanted to get into it because it looks like it addresses all those problems and actually does them right, you know, the first time around.
Yeah, but it's definitely the most simplistic.
Yeah.
I think 2 is the most complicated one, which is funny because X definitely, it's like a big self-learning curve mess just the whole way through. But it's not that it's a bad game because it's a good game. It just has a lot of problems where it's not user-friendly in a lot of aspects.
Yeah.
I really wish Patrick and or even Mike Werby, one of our games editors at Goomba Stomp, was on the podcast today because I never played Xenoblade X for the Wii U. We had Patrick, Tim, and Mike review the game, and the reason why I never played it, I just didn't want to spend my money, was because I remember Mike and Patrick said that after like 25, 30 hours of playing the game, or even like maybe 40, 50 hours of playing the game, they finally gave up. And I was like, man, if you have to wait 30, 35, 40, 50 hours to wait for a game to get good, to me, that's problematic. Like, I'm not going to sit and watch a movie and wait 40 hours for the movie to get good.
Yeah, that's how I also felt about the second one, which, to be honest, even though I have a lot of criticism towards it, I've never actually seen it the whole way through. And that's because I was definitely more than halfway through, but I just could not finish it by myself. So I had a friend that was playing through it, and I watched him finish it. Just a lot of the cutscenes and stuff. I missed some of those plot points, but I watched it on YouTube later on.
But that's not a good game, man. Like, if it's more fun to watch someone play a video game, for example, on YouTube, then your enjoyment is coming out of watching, say, for example, in this case, the cinematic cutscenes, not actually playing the game. And that is why it is a different medium than, say, movies. Movies is a medium in which you are passive. You sit down, you watch the movie, you absorb it. You know, you're not playing it. You're not controlling the characters. You're not controlling the outcome, the ending. With a video game, it's entirely different. And it's one of those games in which I respect, for example, the composer. It has an incredible soundtrack. I see that the graphics are pretty cool, given the fact that it's working on a console that's not as powerful as, say, an Xbox or a PlayStation. But at the end of the day, it is a game, and you still need to enjoy your experience playing the game, like, especially if it's going to demand 50 plus 100 plus hours.
Yeah, it's a 70 to 120 hour game, depending on your skill set. Mm-hmm. And obviously how much you want to complete and stuff like that.
Right, and I don't know if I'm being too critical, because like I said, I did purchase Xenoblade 2. Like, we received the review code. I decided not to take the review code. I forget who I gave it to. Someone wrote the review, and I opted to actually buy the game, which here in Montreal costs $92. It's the magical number I say all the time on the podcast. $92 every time I buy a Nintendo game. So it's damn expensive, right? Now, I usually do not complain, because if I buy Animal Crossing or Zelda or Mario, for me, I get my money's worth. But with this, like with Xenoblade 2,
it's a giant gamble.
It is. It really is. Like, I'm busy. There's a lot of games and movies and TV shows and comic books and books and stuff that I want to read and watch and play. And I just do not want to wait 25, 30 hours for a game to start getting good.
Yeah. So the good part about the original Xenoblade Chronicles is that the story is very focused. So what's good about it is that, unlike the other games where there's a lot of grinding to it, not really grinding, I'd call it, since it's more side quest completion and stuff like that, but you have to do so minimal on the side when you're playing the original that it's great, because you can just go through the whole story. Like, if you don't really want to do the side quests, you honestly don't have to. But what's great is they also give you experience when you go to each location, and they just try and get you to explore. There's like a motive to.
Yeah, I heard about that, you know, when I was reading stuff about the game, and that is a really welcome thing to hear, especially as somebody who plays a fair bit of RPGs. Like, grinding is like the curse of the genre, you know? I enjoy it sometimes, but it's just so monotonous. And I know from, say, playing Xenoblade X, exploration is such a wonderful element of the Xenoblade games, because the worlds are so massive and so just beautiful to explore. So it's really good to hear that it actually rewards you with XP for doing that. It kind of both leans into what makes the series so special while also removing something that's, you know, not the best about the RPG genre all the time.
And even if you don't want to, sorry to butt in, even if you don't want to do the side stuff, the thing is, I think there's a lot of aspects to it that are just intriguing. Like the opening of the game by itself, just the first 20 minutes, or not 20 minutes, more like 10, when you're seeing the Battle of Sword Valley, and it's just like you see Dunban and he's using the Monado, and you're thinking to yourself, like, why is this sword hurting this guy? And then afterwards, when you see him 3 minutes later after the battle, it's like his arm is completely destroyed, and you're like, well, what is the sword? Who are these characters? And you just want to know more about it. And then they don't tell you what happens to certain characters' fates from the beginning, and then you want to know, well, what happened to them later on, and you do see them later on, and it just creates this sense of mystery that you want to have solved. And the game does build on it, though. Like, it continues to add more mystery to it, and by the end of it, you just get everything just unravels, and it's just like this mind-blowing story by the end of it.
Right, and that's what I remember about the original. Like I said, I never finished the game, but I remember the setup being so amazing and wanting to know what happens to these characters. As with Xenoblade 2, I just never found myself caring about the story and or the characters. And I don't know, maybe I need to go back and finish the first game and then return to the second game and try finishing the second game. I can try. I mean, I did spend $92, right? So I should give it a second chance.
If honestly, if you didn't like it the first time, I doubt you're gonna ever like it again. Yeah, and the great thing about it is I don't even know why it's called 2, because it honestly does not even tie into the first game.
Well, that's okay, right? Like, it doesn't.
Oh yeah, I think it's way better since it won't be able to ruin the story in any regard. So I think that's the best part about it.
Okay, so you just don't like the fact that it has number 2, but you're okay with still slapping the actual Xenoblade Chronicles IP on the actual title.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Since it's definitely a Xenoblade Chronicles game, since it has to, you know, it takes the premise of weapons that are of importance and stuff like that. But it definitely, for people who were put off by 2, it's such a shame because it really, compared to X and Xenoblade Chronicles, it just doesn't feel like Xenoblade Chronicles in a lot of aspects, which I think really sucks about it, because now a lot of people have played 2. It was the highest selling game in the series. And now there's just this sour opinion about it for a lot of people, but that's not really what it was.
Yeah, so Campbell, before we talk about Future Connected, I need to know, which of the 3 is your favorite? Oh, wait, sorry, you haven't played... Well, okay, you've played the original Xenoblade. You haven't played the one for Switch, so let's make that clear for listeners. But of the original Xenoblade, Xenoblade X, and Xenoblade 2, which of the 3 are your favorite and why?
The only one I played all the way through and everything is X, and I have so many fond memories of that, even though I have probably just about as many memories of me being absolutely infuriated by the game. But there's just such a joy about X because of how massive the world is to explore. The world, the planet of Mira that is in the game, it's just so incredible to explore with all the different regions. The music is also fantastic in that as well. It's a different composer than 1 and 2, but I still think he did a great job. It's actually the composer of Attack on Titan, which I think is pretty interesting. And again, it was very complex. It doesn't do a good job of explaining things to you. But if you put in the work to understand it and explore it and, you know, learn the systems, it can be really just a pleasure to play. And I really hope that does get a remaster someday to fix the issues of, you know, the tiny text, the unclear instructions, things of that sort.
You know, it's funny because every Wii U game, well, not every Wii U game, but most of the big Wii U titles have been ported to the Switch, but not Xenoblade Chronicles X, but they decided to port the original, which was already released on the Wii U and the 3DS.
I have a feeling X will come to Switch, because originally they were talking about how they wanted to bring X to Switch, and they never even mentioned the original game, but now we have the original game, and where's X? So I think it'll come over eventually.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Xenoblade Chronicles, the original, was probably the one that needed the most work just cosmetically, because it looked great on the Wii, but I mean, come on, those character models, those faces.
Yeah, it definitely has this like muddy palette to it that just doesn't look good. But it also, you know, it was the technology of the GameCube and the Wii, and it was pretty impressive for its time. But now we can do stuff where it's a lot more vast and it has a lot of color, and it just overall, it looks a lot more pleasing. I still see some people, though, that are like, Isaac said this on staff, but he was like, oh, the game he thought looked better on the Wii, which I could see because it looks less, it has like that anime aesthetic. But the thing is, I disagree with him because originally it did look a little anime, but now I feel like it's what their original vision was. Like now they're finally able to achieve it.
Right. To be fair, he hasn't played the new game. He was judging by the trailer, which, you know, at the end of the day, you're watching a low resolution cutscene from a trailer, and no matter how high definition you think your YouTube video is, it's never going to give you a really clear picture and understanding of what the game looks. And we also do not know if the footage was taken at the time when the game was finished. I'm assuming yes, maybe, who knows, right? Like in terms of like the port. So before we cut the break and hopefully get Tim on the podcast, I need to know about Future Connected and why it's so bad.
Here's the thing. It's not bad. That's the thing I'll give it. It's actually really funny because I think it's the best Xenoblade Chronicles game since the original. And at the same time, I think it's just so underwhelming. And it's because you could tell that this story is just 8 years too late. It's way too late to get this done. Like, this story should have been in the base game. And it doesn't even need to be. Because at the end of the day, you have a story that concludes. And if someone did not play this and they played the original and they finished it to the end, you would probably have the same amount of information about the ending, which is funny.
The thing is I was listening to the IGN podcast, and they were raving about the fact that this kind of felt like it was a new game added on to the original game, which is kind of amazing considering its support and you're going to get your money's worth.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's a lot to do in it. But okay. I just think when, you know, when you have to go through a 10-hour story and it's just boring from beginning to end, and the voice acting, like, I love the voice acting in the original, and here it just sounds robotic and it sounds all on and off, and the voice actor for Melia is clearly aged, so it doesn't sound the same, and there's just like all these little nuances with it, and it really takes you out of the atmosphere. But it's not bad. That's the thing about it. It's still entertaining at points, but you could tell that the same writers who did the original, they clearly didn't fully work on this, which is a shame, because there's moments where characters, like, there's one moment where they play off Shulk to be like an idiot, and I'm like, he's just not, like, this was so out of character for him to make certain choices or say certain things.
So would you prefer, and I guess the answer to this question is yes, but you would prefer that they put more work into the actual polish of the game as opposed to tacking on an extra story which was not needed and is not great at the end of the day?
That's a hard question.
I feel like the selling point is the fact that we are sort of getting, like, quote-unquote, a new game in terms of the amount of content they're giving you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the base game already is huge, and if they were going to add on more to it, I think there could be more after Xenoblade Chronicles. But the thing is, the way it ends, it feels like the story was done. But now, after this epilogue, it feels like they've officially closed the doors on these characters forever. But the thing is, it just wasn't needed, because it already felt closed at the ending, and it feels like they're trying to close it again. But there was really, like, I mean, if you didn't do the side quests, then I could see why someone might have a few questions. And there were still some things that I wanted to know about the ending of the game. But there's nothing in this epilogue that really answered my questions about the ending of the game, which is a shame, because there's so much more to see of a Bionis post all the events of the game, but they just never show it because you're so focused on the shoulder and Alchemoth, which are the two locations, but you never go back to anything else.
I mean, couldn't they answer those questions in a sequel?
Well, that's the thing, because if you play the game from beginning to end, it has this theme, which I don't, once again, I don't want to spoil it, but if you play it from beginning to end, it fully makes sense. And it feels like these characters are done at the end of their story. They achieve their goal. They're done. That's it. Like, there's nothing else to really talk about what happened. Because here's the thing. The epilogue itself contradicts the ending of the game. Because it's just so hard to describe without going into spoilers. Okay. Yeah. But all I'll say is it contradicts the theme. It contradicts... That's the problem with it.
Okay, I think I'm actually going to pick up the game. What we could do is maybe have you back on the show and do a review in which we spoil the story and get into the nitty-gritty. Campbell, do you have anything to add before we cut to break?
Well, I'm just going to say that, you know, given my limited experience with Xenoblade, the definitive edition sounds like the perfect way for me to finally experience a series in a way that gives me minimal frustration, you know? So I'm excited about that. And even if the future connected stuff is disappointing, overall, it's still extra content. And, you know, I can always appreciate a developer putting in the extra work for it, even if it didn't turn out as good as it could have. So, yeah.
Yeah, I want to see how well it sells. Like, I want to see if it's going to be like a huge hit on the Switch, because, you know, when you look at a game like, or a series like Fire Emblem, it has, I mean, the new Fire Emblem game Three Houses isn't the most successful in the franchise. I think it's in second place, but it's only because Fates was, they released like three games, right? So technically, like, you had to buy, well, you didn't have to, but you could have bought three games. Anyways, whatever, it sold really well. So the point is, by adding characters to Super Smash, it seems like a series like Fire Emblem has picked up a huge fan base, as you know, when you compare it to, like, way back in, like, 2010. So I just want to see if it sells well. Because I, like, personally, like, for me, I want to see a series like Xenoblade or something like Fire Emblem sell well. I want to see them make more games like this. I don't want Nintendo to just make the Mario and Zelda and Animal Crossing games. You know, we need, like, what makes Nintendo great is the fact that they have so many great IPs. I also want to see them make new IPs, right? So I'm curious to see what the sales numbers will be like, especially given the fact that I think the month of April was a record breaker in terms of how many games were sold across the entire industry, not just Nintendo. Like, we all know the Switch did very well. You look at a game like Animal Crossing, but I think the video game industry made like $15.5 billion just in video game sales in 1 month, which is insane. Of course, there's a pandemic going on, but still, I want to see how much money this game makes. So anyhow, you recommend we buy the game.
Yes. I think, in my opinion, I think this is the type of game where it sits on your shelf next to Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, and Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Now, if anyone thinks that maybe you're being a bit critical, although you're being very positive, your review calls it a masterpiece.
Yeah, I think the original is a masterpiece, and I think they added so many great new changes to this one that just further enhances it. I mean, if you get deep into like mythologies and fantasy worlds, Xenoblade Chronicles offers like as much as stuff like Star Wars. Like, it's such an epic world that has so much potential, which I'd love to see it expanded upon. But the thing is, I don't want to see it expanded upon because it's just that perfect story where it's just from beginning to end, it doesn't disappoint. It just kept getting better and better and better.
Yeah, we got to wrap up because Tim's got to come on and we got to talk. We have a lot of things to talk about in this podcast. But I got to tell you, Mark, I was proofreading your review and you really sold me on it. Anyhow, I'm going to pick it up. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the great Tim Mason will join us.
Welcome back to N-Express. We are at a hodgepodge of a segment where we're going to talk about every game under the sun, starting with the game that I said we retired last week, but that episode, Rick, was lost. So you do have some final thoughts on Animal Crossing, some closing sentiments that you wanted to get off of your chest. I want to give you that opportunity before we move on to so many other games.
No, I'm going to keep talking about this game. I'm not going to end it today. It's not going to be a closing discussion of like the greatest game ever made. I love this game. I just wanted to know, like, okay, like, I'm still playing Animal Crossing. I feel like I'm a crazy person. I put in over 400 hours into this game. But here's the thing. My story of the day. So I hopped on Animal Crossing. My nephew finally got the game. So I want to go visit his island. But then I noticed that Aaron Santos, the original co-host of the N-Express podcast, right? He was on. And so I was like, I'm going to go visit his island. And sure enough, there's all these people on his island. And so I was talking to all of his cousins and his family members. And I started like trading like information with him. I was like, am I a crazy person? Like, I'm asking these people online who I've never met to exchange like, you know, information. Like, how do I contact you? Like, can I contact you via Twitter or Facebook or call you or email you? Because so we can trade, you know, trade items or furniture or whatever. And anyhow, but it's great because I just feel like it's weird. Like, I feel like I'm meeting all of these weird people in the strangest way possible via a video game. And I know a lot of people normally do this. There's a lot of like online games. But for me, it's like it's something new because I don't normally like to play games with people. But yeah, I love this game. At the end of the year, guys, I mean, I don't expect Animal Crossing to be number one on our list of the best games of 2020, but I expect it to be on the top five.
Really? You don't think number one?
No. Last of Us 2, Final Fantasy, maybe Cyberpunk.
Xenoblade Chronicles, when you don't think about Future Connected.
Those things are all well and good, but the narratives that I can create in Animal Crossing, far superior.
Yeah, man, I honestly love how people are getting really creative with the game. People making, like, talk shows, fashion shows, trailers, movie trailers, short films. It's fantastic. Like the thing about Animal Crossing, it's what you do with the game and how you play it, right? And that's what makes it great. If you're just gonna, you know, and collect some weed every so often, you're gonna get bored.
Yeah. So we have a number of games that we have to review on the show right now. So we're gonna move past Animal Crossing. You could say that we're moving out, but not just yet, because we're going to get there. First, we're going to talk about Shantae, though. Everyone's favorite pirate gal. I don't know.
He's a half genie. Right.
The better transition would have been everyone's favorite genie in a bottle, Tim.
Is that true?
I don't know.
That would be Robin Williams, sir.
Oh,
snap. Why does that world take place in a bottle?
I cannot argue with that. Robin Williams will always be the best genie, but Shantae, very close. Very, very close.
And you're here to tell us about that right now.
That I am. I'm going to shake my hips into discussing Shantae Half Genie Hero. Or not Half Genie Hero, that was the last game. I'm going to talk about the sequel, which is Shantae and the Seven Sirens. And I love the Shantae series. For those who don't know, it's a series of Metroidvanias from WayForward, who are basically like the original indie developers, and Shantae is our mascot, basically. So Shantae and the Seven Sirens is the latest entry in the series. It actually came out episodically over like 6 months on Apple Arcade, but now it's finally out on consoles as like one actual release. And I've just got to say, I love this from beginning to end. I'm a massive Shantae fan. But what they do with Seven Sirens is they take everything that was cool about the previous games, which were great for, say, their items, their transformations, because Shantae can transform into different animals a lot of times. It takes the items that were so cool in the previous fan favorite game, Pirate's Curse. It takes the dances that were cool in the first two games and combines all of them together, and then it wraps it up in this beautiful presentation as well. It has anime cutscenes, including an opening by Studio Trigger, who made the Kill la Kill anime, which is also fantastic. So it's extremely ambitious all the way through. Like I said, it's a Metroidvania. Its world is just wonderfully designed. It's big, there's lots to explore, but at the same time, it never feels overwhelming. It never holds your hand, but you never feel lost at the same time, which is a big thing for a Metroidvania to do. It just feels wonderful to play for that reason. There's lots of cool abilities to experiment with. The personality, of course, is one of the best things of any Shantae game, because I wrote in the review that it has a strangely off-color yet wholesome sense of humor, which sounds weird to say, but if you play the game, it makes sense. So yeah, that's like the bird's eye view of Shantae and the Seven Sirens, which is just a wonderful little Metroidvania that I make a pretty bold claim in my review. I think it's up there alongside Hollow Knight as one of the finest Metroidvanias recently.
Wow, if Patrick were only here. He loves Hollow Knight. Yeah. So I noticed you had a lot of comments on Reddit and on the website, and maybe one or two people were complaining that they changed the composer and Jay Kaufman is no longer involved in the music.
Yes, that is the one thing that I was genuinely unhappy with for the game. The previous games had this fantastic soundtrack by Jay Kaufman, who's just an amazing composer. You might know him from composing the music for Shovel Knight as well. Yeah, so he's fantastic, but he was not brought on for this game, and instead they had a team of new composers, none of whom I'd heard of before. And the music is by no means bad. There's some tunes that are pretty catchy, and there's a few remixes of tunes from previous Shantae games that are really, really good. I enjoyed a lot. But a lot of the soundtrack adopts a strangely chiptune style, which is like nothing bad in its own right. But the game's visuals are these beautiful HD painterly graphics. It's really beautiful to look at, runs fantastically. So it doesn't make sense that it would have such a retro-inspired soundtrack. It just feels jarring, you know? And that's really the disappointing thing. The soundtrack is fine, but just can't Shantae Legacy.
But Yeah, bit tracks are kind of a dime a dozen these days, so it's especially disappointing, especially since Shantae has never been backwards in its mindset and its approach to game design in general. So, like, why take any element and make it retroactive, right?
Yeah. Like, that's a weird thing, because it is kind of backwards looking a little bit, because, like I mentioned, it works a lot with that work from the previous games. It doesn't introduce a lot of stuff that's brand new for the series. Instead, it takes mechanics that were great in, you know, Pirate's Curse, Risky's Revenge, those previous games. So it makes sense that it's trying to look back a little bit, but I don't think the music is an area that they should have looked back that far on. You know, Jay Coffin was just fine. We didn't need to go back to the NES.
Yeah, so without any new abilities, is this game going to stand out on its own? Is it, in your eyes, is it on the better end of the Shantae series? Is it somewhere in the middle, a little bit on the lower end of the spectrum? What do you think?
Well, I should clarify that it's not that there's no new abilities. It's just that there's no new mechanics, per se. Like, you have transformations that are back from the previous games. You know, you could dance and transform into a bird, into a bat, things like that. You just have new transformations. But, you know, there's not a new mechanic along those lines this time around. So, but I wrote in the review that it is easily, in my view at least, easily the best in the series so far, because there were a lot of things, like for the previous games, people loved them, I loved them, but there were things that were holding them back. So, for example, the previous game was Half-Game Hero, and it was a good game, but it was so linear, which is like the cardinal sin for Metroidvania, you know? So it ditches that from Half-Genie Hero, and it incorporates the items and abilities that you had in Pirate's Curse, which was a previous game that was a wonderful Metroidvania, but it took away the transformations and the dances that you had in previous games. So it brought back the wonderful Metroidvania design from Pirate's Curse. It then brought back the transformations from the first two games, and it brought back the beautiful visuals from Half-Genie Hero. So it really feels like a tour de force of the Shantae series. So if you are a fan of the Shantae games, it's like all killer, no filler. You know, it's everything that you love about it. And even it's good for people who haven't played the first games as well. Because, like I said, because it brings in all that stuff that was so good the first time around, you really don't have to put up with anything that's subpar or anything that's, you know, not quite so good. You know, like I also mentioned in the review, there's some elements of, like, you might feel a bit, it doesn't really introduce a lot of the characters, per se. So if you're new to the series, it throws all the characters at you and doesn't introduce them, per se. So it might be a little weird for newcomers at that point. So, yeah, all that is to say, I think it's a fantastic game. And whether you're new to the series or you've been playing since the GBA, it's fantastic.
In your review, you rave about the visuals, and you say screenshots don't do it justice. And I'm looking at the screenshots, and the screenshots look incredible. Now, you played it on the Switch, right? You reviewed it on the Switch?
Yes.
Okay, because this game, no offense, Mark, but this game looks better than Xenoblade Chronicles. Because when you put up the screenshots for your review, it's been driving me nuts. The game looks terrible on the Switch. It's
like... Yeah, it does not. Here's the worst part. Nintendo's press center, I have no idea what they were thinking, but you saw them.
Yeah.
They posted, like, these compressed images, and it's like, was it like a potato to a modem? Like, yeah. What did they use to upload this?
Oh my god. So I'm sorry, Nintendo, if you're listening, and I know people from Nintendo listen, the screenshots, right, from the press center, from Nintendo.
Like, somebody's got to upload it.
Are so fix it. Bad. Like, I was like, were the screenshots taken on handheld mode? And that's why Mark was saying we should play it on dock mode. But anyways, Campbell, I'm looking at the... First of all, everyone should go read your review. It's like super popular. Raves on like Reddit and stuff, but yeah, it looks fantastic. And again, Tim, once again, the Nintendo Switch, man, it's like the greatest video game console that's not the Super Nintendo.
I really think that Super Nintendo, N64, GameCube, they gotta watch their backs, man. They really do at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, N64, SNES, they don't have Shantae Seven Sirens, you know, and that's major fault against them. So,
but, all the Switch needs is a Banjo Kazooie, and then that's it. It's got all my favorites.
Yeah. So, yeah, on the topic of the visuals, I know the screenshots do look really good, but at the same time, I have seen comments, like you were saying on Reddit, of people saying, like, oh, it looks like a Flash game. It looks like, you know, too cartoony and stuff. And, like, I can kind of see, like, if you're looking at the screenshots, it looks a bit like Half Genie Hero. You know, if you
wait,
put them side
sorry,
by side.
Sorry, someone says it looks too cartoony. Like, do they know what game they are playing? Like, what are they expecting, L from, like, The Last of Us? Like, I'm confused.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we all need Shantae to have the 4K realistic 3D graphics.
Man, I feel like a lot of times when people leave feedback, they do not know how to express themselves. Like they're looking for a way to say something and they don't really know how to say it. So they just kind of like repeat whatever it is they heard somewhere else. Like that makes no sense.
Exactly. But
we should do an episode just entirely on comments. My favorite is when someone just says something like, this is a bad article, and you're like, you got me. Like, you nailed it. First try. I don't know what you're referring to, but you're right.
It's actually really funny. Because for Reddit, I was reading all the comments for my Xenoblade Chronicles review, and it's so funny because some people put feedback to like the actual article itself by my writing. And they're like, use the wrong word here. Or for the title, like I said, near phenomenal. I don't know who let me post that, but it should have been like almost perfect or something. Like one of those words. So it's funny because when I'm writing and stuff, I'm like, oh, that's good advice. Like that's good feedback. I didn't think about that when I edited it.
Yeah. I've had that same thing happen with some of my articles and stuff. Like I'm writing like, yeah, this sounds good. And then somebody else will read it and be like, what were you on when you were writing this? I'm so sorry. Then people saying that this game looks too cartoony. So you always got to take comments with a grain of salt.
Well, I'm just confused what they mean by it looks too cartoony.
If you compare it to previous games, they have like, you know, this distinct pixelated style, and some people are upset that they're going to this hand-painted look. Like they might want it to still be pixelated, which is fair because the pixelated games look great. I think these look even better. And while, the screenshots do look great, they look even better in motion because everything is so fluid. That's the most beautiful thing about playing the game, honestly. Every animation is so intricate, detailed, and fast. You know, it's just a gorgeous game to look at. Every character feels alive. There's a lot of animations that are like, there's so many wonderful little details for the animations. Like I'm looking at one screenshot now, there's a blue enemy who like bows to you, like she's a ballet dancer. She has all these little dance moves and she like then collapses down into a puddle and then rolls around the screen. And those animations are just beautiful. That standard of animation carries on throughout the entire game. So that's what I mean when screenshots don't do it justice. When you look at it in still frame, it looks good. Then you see everything moving around in the world coming to life. It's stunning, simply. So
it's the classic case of people not liking changes, but they haven't actually played the game, so they decide to complain because it seems like most people in our society nowadays are whiny bitches. Anyhow.
Welcome to the internet.
Yeah, it's not the internet, it's society.
But Campbell, how are the cinematics for the game? Since the only trailer I honestly saw for the game, it was like a cutscene of like her waking up, and it kind of looked like a Saturday morning cartoon aesthetic to it, which I really enjoyed. So I was like, I just want to know, does it have like those cinematics? Or is it just like...
Is it too cartoony?
Yes, way too cartoony. It made me want to watch a Saturday morning cartoon. It made me want a Shantae anime.
See, I don't see that as a bad thing, though, if it looks that way. I think it looks good.
It looks like a show that I'm controlling. It's garbage.
Exactly. But, there are cinematics throughout the whole game. The trailer that you're talking about is the opening cinematic that was done by Studio Trigger, who did Kill la Kill. It has their distinctive, like, very angular action style, which I think is great. The rest of the cinematics are done in-house by WayForward. So the animation does look pretty different from that. So there are a few cutscenes throughout the game. There's not a lot, and most of them are very, very short. Like, the most cutscenes are just little introduction videos that play when you're about to fight a boss. Like, it'll show the boss waking up or the boss encountering Shantae or something like that. And then there are a few for the more major story beats. But most of them are very, very short. And I think if you add them all up, you probably get, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes of footage max. But they still add a very nice detail to the storytelling. And they are, in my view, at least perfectly cartoony. And they add a nice bit of personality and life to the game. Yeah.
That sounds incredible. Your review is on the site now, so go and review. Check out the review. But if you like Metroidvanias, Shantae will not steer you wrong. Campbell, Shantae can transform into animals. Can she transform into a bug?
Not that I am aware. There is one transformation where she turns like a drill thing, but I don't think that's a beetle.
I think Tim was just trying to transition to the next game. Just segueing.
like a champion.
So we're going to talk about Bug Fables.
Yes, I can transform this awkward thing into a transition into talking about Bug Fables.
If it's not awkward, I haven't done my job.
Okay, so guys, I'm confused. One of yous reviewed the game, one of yous did the interview. I had no clue this game existed until I saw you guys publish your articles.
I actually haven't published the review yet.
Okay, you haven't published a review.
I haven't finished the review. Yeah, because I was doing Xenoblade, and I had, you know, I just absolutely wanted to make sure that was perfect, and I got all my thoughts out on it. So that really took me away from Bug Fables. Well, I also did the Liberated interview, you know, and Avatar. I still got Avatar coming, the ranking. But it's funny because I used to watch my older brother play the Paper Mario games. And when I saw this, I was like, it looks exactly like those. And then when I sat down to play it, I just had this feeling of like, this is literally the Paper Mario game that fans were waiting for. Because it really honestly is. Like, it follows it like beat for beat, just like the gameplay and the aesthetic. It feels like it was developed for the GameCube.
Yeah, it's really wonderful that way. But I think another thing that makes it really special for Paper Mario fans is something that the developer said in my interview with them. They said that, you know, if you look at gameplay of Bug Fables, it looks almost exactly like a Paper Mario game because of the 3D environments, the 2D paper cutout style characters. You know, the art style is super Paper Mario-esque.
It looks kind of cartoony, gotta say.
It does, yeah. Almost as if that's the point, but, you know. But the developers think that the visual started out as just being like, oh, we're inspired by Paper Mario. This is what the game will look like. But they said that they changed their direction from it being an inspiration to just being their art style, which is something that doesn't sound very impactful on paper. But if you compare it to what Paper Mario has become, it's really significant. Because Paper Mario is now self-conscious about, we're a paper game, you know, color splash, all about paper and, you know, color pages being drained of color. Origami King is all about paper being folded up. And that was a tendency that wasn't present in the original games. So Bug Fables simply presents that as an art style. The game is just not really affected by their paper-esque style, and that allows it to stand on its own and really catch some of the confidence that made the older Paper Marios feel.
Tim, are you a huge fan of Paper Mario? I always forget. I know we like The Legend of the Seven Stars, but...
I like the original Paper Mario a lot. One of my biggest regrets in gaming is never playing Thousand Year Door. My friend had it, and I don't live anywhere near her anymore, and so I never had the opportunity to borrow it, and it costs a fortune to buy now, so I really like the original. Everything they did after that, I've enjoyed to an extent, but not nearly as much as the original. So, yeah, like, we can crack as many jokes as we want about some of the later entries, Sticker Star in particular. But it's really, really cool that Moonsprout Games decided to kind of revive this very, very classic RPG style of game, very much in the vein of the original two Paper Mario games. So Campbell's saying, like, it looks like it came out on the GameCube, going back to that era, 1,000 Year Door.
Yeah, actually, that.
My bad. There's too many people here. You're the same person now because you're both working on the same game. So I'll correct that real quick. Like Mark said, it looks like it came out on the GameCube when 1,000 Year Door was in its heyday. So it's very much this revival. And that's fascinating. That's such a good way to get people on board immediately to say, like, hey, we're continuing this original concept that someone else abandoned. And it's worked for other games in the past, right? Like, Bravely Default kind of picked up the torch that Final Fantasy abandoned a very long time ago. And we have so many other games that are inspired by or these revitalizations, but it goes beyond just the visual style. So that's really, really exciting to hear about. And to hear that, you know, it also plays well is really reassuring.
Is this game going to get released on the Switch?
Wait, what? It came out today on Switch.
Oh, it is out today, because I thought it was only out on Steam.
No, yeah, it's originally came to Steam first. It was gonna, I think it was going to come to Switch like a few weeks after the Steam release, but that didn't happen.
Can you imagine if they released this game in July? That would be bad.
It's funny because literally, I think it, like 2 weeks ago, it got like its official date announcement. And then literally like a day later, they announced a new Paper Mario.
Yeah, they lucked out, man. Because like, I mean, the game looks good, but I wouldn't want to release this game the same like week, for example, as a new Paper Mario. Can you imagine if this game is actually better than the new Paper Mario?
I will put money down on it.
Come on, new Paper Mario looks good. I'm telling you, I got a good feeling, Tim. It's gonna be good.
Yeah, I'm hoping it'll be good, but you know, I've been let down twice, so I'm gonna, you know, keep my expectations flat.
Like the paper for the game.
Yeah, and you know the thing about paper, when it goes in the wrong direction, it cuts deep, right? So, there's my terrible, terrible joke for the day out of the way. I can move on. You can all enjoy that.
Moving on to another topic.
We should probably, move out of Bug Fables and move on to our next review, which, anecdotally, hey, Mark, are you having a little bit of deja vu? Because I don't know if you guys have covered this yet. We did lose an episode of NXPress, tragically.
This is the third time we're saying this
We can't reiterate how much this has already happened, how into the void that episode is. It's tragic. It's happened a couple of times now. Technology is not the friend of this show all the time. And your friends might not be your friends after playing Moving Out, because we have an overcooked Can we call it that now?
It's overcooked, except moving boxes, and moving boxes is hell in this instance.
So it's hell, but you sold me on it so well last time. I was like, looking at the game, I'm buy it right now. So good luck. I'm sure you can convince everyone else. Give us a little.
If I can't convince them now, you know, you could release the Kalarov cut later down the line.
Sounds
whatever's
good,
left of that podcast episode. But for Moving Out, I mean, so short story. I do what's called, we do a summer speed run every year, RIP this summer, because, you know, pandemic. But we do a different four-player game. It's just me and three other friends, and we always go through something. And last year we did Overcooked, and I don't think we've yelled at each other so much one year. We were literally screaming at each other throughout this whole game. But it was one of the most fun I've ever had for a multiplayer game. And Moving Out, it's that. Except this time, there's something about it where it's not as frustrating. Maybe because it's easier. But it's a lot more humorous for some reason. Which I don't know why, but, you know. So in the game, there's an 80s aesthetic around moving boxes, and you're this moving company called Oh my god, I have to look up the name of it really quick. I know the acronym is FART, but yeah, the acronym, you're the Furniture Arrangement and Relocation Technicians, which are known as FART. So you have to go around from home to home and try your best not to destroy everything while moving it. But obviously they tell you, go ahead and destroy it. And there's like a lot of humor behind movers insurance, which wouldn't sound funny, but it really is once you play it.
So the game actually has its own sense of humor rather than letting most of the humor arrive from in-kitchen antics. There's something inherently funny about destroying someone else's stuff entirely. So I totally get where you're coming from. When you originally played this, you said you played with your brother, correct?
I did, because we were both trapped at home together. And we were still screaming at each other during this game. But we weren't screaming. We were like, we got to get the box. There's like 2 seconds left. So, you know. But it's funny because unlike Overcooked, when I replay these levels, you can create like your own pattern of what you're going to take everything out each time. So it feels fresh every single time you play a level, which is nice because with Overcooked, it's like if you miss the final recipe by like a few seconds, you're going to be pissed that you have to replay the entire thing because those can be some damn hard levels.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to like the original ending for the first game and you have like 15 straight minutes of nonsense. Oh, yeah. And then you miss like a pizza and you fail and you're just like, I can't believe I have to do this again. So it's nice that the game's not quite on that level, but still that coordination's required. It sounds like antics are encouraged. Is there something in particular that you can remember? What's the most ridiculous thing you yelled at your brother while playing this game? Do you remember?
Oh my god. There was one time where all we had one object left. I think it was a couch, but the couch was like extremely long because you have to like drag it out of the house rather than the other ones that you could just throw. And all I remember is we had 10 seconds left and I'm just like, we got to get this couch the hell out of here. So we're literally trying to drag it out and he got stuck at the door because it just like closed that he couldn't get the couch out. So what I would have had to done was jump on the couch and open the door. And we were sitting there and I remember we were just both fidgeting the controller and he just like threw it by accident. It just like went flying out of his hands since we were just so, just the moment was just too intense. We cracked.
So good. I want to hire that company for sure. The one that everyone's going as fast as possible and mentally cracking. So yeah, this game has its own unique art style that is so don't exactly anticipate Overcooked.
Wait, did you say it has a unique art style? How?
It's
very similar distinct. To Overcooked.
I mean, it looks like a lot of indie games, you know, with the isometric kind of blocky 3D style, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it unique. If anything, what I would call unique is the 80s visuals, which is really cool if they have VHS.
Blair. Yeah.
They have like these VHS tapes and stuff, which are really funny because they're supposed to be like, you know, like how in some modern TV shows how they like make fun of older tapes and it'll be like just these like comical VHSs that you're watching where it's like, don't do this, or like, you need to do this.
Wait, sorry, what? I'm confused. What?
So how do I describe it? What's a good example?
Instructional videos?
Yeah, like
like exercise videos?
Yeah. Like that.
I mean, yeah. Do they not make exercise instructional videos nowadays? Just not on video cassette, like on Blu-ray? I guess not, right?
No.
Rick, it's like the exaggeration. It's like the exaggeration of it. That's what I mean.
This game looks incredible. It sounds incredible. People should know what they're in for if they know anything about Overcooked. But if you don't, then I don't know. Imagine cooperative Mario Kart where you're all throwing blue shells at each other. It just like doesn't make any sense, but it's so good at the same time. Just mass chaos. and eventually trying to get on the exact same mental wavelength and laughing when it doesn't work out. So thank you so much for reviewing that. Check out that review. It's on the site as well. And I again, cannot wait to buy this one and play it with my wife. Hopefully you don't hear about my divorce in the coming weeks, which I think means we've run the full gauntlet of games.
Does your daughter play video games?
My daughter?
Yeah.
She's played Animal Crossing one time, but she's also not even 1.5, so.
So you actually sit her down, give her a control, and she stares at the screen?
I was chilling. My wife was watching her. I had been watching her all day, and my wife was like, oh yeah, just go take a break. I went into the other room and started playing Animal Crossing. And so, of course, she followed after me and kept yelling this and pointing to my controller. So I handed it to her and hoped she didn't, like, discard anything. But she was actually moving the guy around and, like, inspecting all the fish in my inventory. It was really, really funny that she was, like, managing to control a game. I'm like, I don't know how you're doing this. That controller, like, how are you even holding it? Your hands are tiny. It was incredible. There's so many games I can't wait to teach her, but it's going to be a long time before that happens, I'm sure.
Man, if I had kids, I never want kids, but if I had kids, they would have to be able to play video games and watch movies by themselves. That's the rule.
Yeah, because you're going to be busy doing the same thing, right?
Exactly, right, yeah. You sit there, you play your Animal Crossing, I'm going to play on my own Switch.
Don't look at Dad's screen because it's Bloodborne.
It's good to know, Tim. You haven't handed her the Mad Catz controller yet. That's not even plugged in.
No, everything I give her is genuine. She's got I'm gonna put her up against me in Mario Kart. And say, if you can beat me, you've earned my love.
This is why Nintendo will never die, because future generations will always for real. I mean, I guess there's still a lot of people who play Xbox, but I don't like. I know people who have kids, and they'll introduce their kids to PlayStation and or Nintendo, but never really Xbox. I don't know, maybe I'm just alone, but all the friends I know that are like huge fans of Xbox, their kids do not play Xbox and or they just don't have kids.
I think part of it is that it's like very limited in titles that you would actually bring up from the original era of Xbox, and some of those titles are so antiquated. It's like, what did I play on my original Xbox? Morrowind. I'm like, I love Morrowind so much, but I'm not going to hand my daughter Morrowind. I'm going to say, play Skyrim. Everything about it ran better than Morrowind, so don't play Morrowind. But also, like, you know, we're going to play Halo still, the original Halo. So good.
I'm so surprised they didn't take all those rare IPs and just make tons of different games out of them.
I'm really surprised they haven't released a rare collection on the Nintendo Switch yet, because they would make so much more money than what they made on the Xbox. I mean, think about it. Cuphead's on Switch. Give us Banjo, man.
I think I have a feeling it could eventually, but I don't think it will. At least not this generation.
I mean, never say never. Final Fantasy VII is on my Nintendo Switch, and that's insane still.
But that would make so much money. Why? Okay, Mark, if I put $15 million in front of your house, right, would you walk outside to grab the $15 million or leave it there?
You know how much I love Banjo, because they're really like, I want that game on Switch, but I just don't think it's ever going to happen. And I just think
he's on Smash. He's in Smash.
He is. Well, so is Cloud, and, you know, where's my Final Fantasy VII remake? Or Persona 5 with Joker, you know?
Well, Final Fantasy VII is on the Switch, the original.
Yes, the original
one. You know, that makes sense.
But Persona, you know, Joker's lacking behind.
Right. Anyhow, Tim, what are we doing next week?
So next week, we have been waiting to do this for weeks on end. Rick, I think we're bringing back our sports draft, our Nintendo sports draft. Next week should be the Nintendo Football League.
Okay.
And I cannot wait to crush you guys. Yeah. Beyond that, I do not know where we're going. Actually, you know what, Rick? You know what I will say? I bet you money this is like one of those prediction times. I'm putting myself out there. I bet you money we get news on the Pokemon DLC next week. June 2nd. Exact date. It's going to happen. It's either going to be a Pokemon Direct or a trailer will drop. I guarantee you.
Isn't that a thing coming out this month?
Yeah. So they're going to announce the trailer. They're going to release a trailer. It's going to have the release date, which is going to be June 19th. I know that for other reasons. Just trust me on that. It's going to be June 19th. They're going to announce Pokemon Home working with Pokemon Go finally. That's going to happen on June 2nd because Pokemon Go is going into maintenance. And they're going to, in the meantime, announce the new raid event, which is going to be Melmetal, because that's the only G-Max Pokemon that hasn't been released yet. Those are all going to happen. I guarantee.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Just watch.
Pokemon
Just
Go watch. Is going to announce some huge event during a pandemic when people are supposed to show that.
Yep.
What? I don't know if you're being honest or if you actually know things that we don't know.
I don't actually know anything. Just right. All of the stars are aligning and I'm reading the stars and the stars are pointing
in this direction. What about Pokemon Sleep?
About that thing? That thing's,
did they put it to sleep? You know,
yeah, it's in a coma. I don't know what happened to that. I'm not going to make any predictions.
I don't get it. What's sleep?
So they announced a thing called Pokemon Sleep, and nobody knows still what it is, but it's like an official thing.
They had this
press conference, and they went over it for like 30 minutes, and they still haven't, you know, talked about it.
Rick, it's like an adult baby monitor, so you can watch your spouse sleep. And you catch Pokemon on them while they're sleeping.
Okay, like, we're at an hour and 20-minute mark, so we need to wrap up. Are you guys, like, I don't know if you guys are joking around. Like, are you being, like,
is this a real bit was a lie?
That really happened.
That last bit was a lie? It's a sleep monitor. You just, like, put it on your bed and it tracks your sleep. And you catch Pokemon somehow. No one knows anything about this thing. They just announced it. It was weird. It's a Pokemon.
Also, isn't there a Detective Pikachu game coming to Switch?
Yeah, it already got ported.
I mean, they haven't said anything about it. So,
they didn't say a sequel is coming.
They didn't say whether it's a sequel or a port. They just said that, like, hey, Detective Pikachu is coming to Switch. Stay tuned next year.
You guys are not lying. I'm on the Twitter account, Pokemon Sleep, coming 2020.
Yeah, why would I lie about Pokemon?
Because do you realize that the fact that they're calling it Pokemon Sleep, like, do you know? I mean, anyhow, I'm not a fan of the Pokemon series. This is silly. It says right here on an article, Pokemon Sleep is Pokemon Go when you're sleeping.
Weird side.
We don't even know what it is, though. Unless if that guy's got, you know, advance info a year in advance.
I just put all that out there so that next week all of our listeners' jaws will drop when I'm 100% accurate, and then I'll be the show's true prophet. Anyway, this is getting out of hand. What do you say we wrap this bad boy and go hide from the heat? Is it hot where you guys are? It's hot here.
Dude, I'm melting. It's 39 degrees in Montreal, which for you guys, according to Campbell, is like 120, I think. It's insane. I'm actually, just before we wrap up the show, because I need to know, it's going to drive me nuts. So, 39 degrees Celsius.
Oh, yeah, because
it's 102.2.
I was close, what did I say? I wasn't close. I think I said like 97 or something.
That was cool.
to be fair, I do have a swimming pool, but it doesn't help when I'm not swimming because my AC broke down, Tim. My AC broke down on the hottest day ever.
That's just this
sort of connects to the podcast. So the thing is I can't play my Nintendo Switch for too long because I'm afraid it's going to overheat because it gets so hot. So I have to turn it off. And that is why I'm not playing as much Animal Crossing as I should be playing. But anyways, the guy's coming tomorrow. He's going to hopefully fix it so I can play Xenoblade Chronicles. Because according to Mark, it's amazing. And maybe I should get Shantae.
Please play it. Yeah. If you manage to crash through it 70 hours this week, then we can, you know, talk some spoilers eventually.
Matt, I have this new thing now where I'm like really, really trying to get back in shape like I used to be in shape when I was playing basketball every day. And so I'm actually doing, this is going to sound weird, but I'm doing workouts while playing Animal Crossing. And I think I'm going to be doing it while I play every single video game from now on. Like you could do ab exercises while playing a video game, for example. Like there's all kinds of things you could do, especially when you have loading time, like on Animal Crossing. You could do like 50, like, well, maybe not 50, but you could do like 20 push-ups while you're waiting for the game to load. And then 20 push-ups while you're waiting to talk to someone. And 20 push-ups while you're waiting for, like, I don't know, an update. Like, seriously, by the time you finish Animal Crossing, you could have done 200 push-ups.
Who needs Ring Fit Adventure?
It's sold out. It's sold out.
No, and, like,
I want to get that game. And nobody has it.
Sold out. Tim has
it. I saw it at a Target near my college. And I was like, should I get it? And I was like, nah, I'll get it in the future. And now I haven't seen it since.
Tim, imagine if we were doing a video cast. You could work out and show us how it's like.
I could work out that. On live on the show, which is not my nightmare at all, as I'm pouring sweat. Right? That's a great idea. All right. All right. Mark, thank you for being here. Where can we find you online?
You can find all my articles at GoombaStomp.com, of course. And then anything else is at the Markal.
And that's K-A-L, in case you're wondering. Yes.
And Mark with a C, not a K.
That's also worth clarifying. We're going to confuse a lot of people. Campbell, what about you?
Yep, you can find me, all my articles, at GoombaStomp.com. I write a lot about indie games. It's kind of my job as the indie games editor. And you can also find me on Twitter at Campbell S. Gill, a very professional handle for me.
I can respect it, but it's not funny, so...
I know, I should have made it like Campbell Soup or something, but I was feeling very... serious when I made that handle, so
you can play the straight man, I guess. Rick, what about you?
You can find me over at GoombaStomp.com. I run the official Twitter account for GoombaStomp, which is GoombaStomp Mag. Check us out on Facebook. We're on social media everywhere. Support a podcast. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, everywhere. Check it out on the website. And we'll try to be back next week, if not the week after. But I think we'll be back next week. And that'll bring us to episode 200, a big celebration, the anniversary episode. And I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. I've put up with a lot of garbage between Rick and Patrick and Aaron back in the day. So it's going to be nice to have 200 episodes.
Me, I rarely complain. I'm like Mr. Positive. People make fun of me because every single week I have a new favorite game. You guys are, well, Patrick's the one who's negative.
I'm the one that's making fun of you, yeah. I'm the bully here. So after that weirdness, I'm Tim Mason. Find me at Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N. Check out my work on Goomba Stomp. There is more coming. Lots to look forward to when it's finally all put together. But in the meantime, check out my other show, Game Boys, all about co-op and multiplayer. If you like this show, go to Apple Podcasts, seriously. Drop us a rating. Drop us a review. It goes an enormously long way. Gets us new review codes. Gets us new friends and new followers, which we're into. So join us, the rest of the Nintendo Nation out there listening, and help us out. Thank you so much for listening. We'll hopefully be back next week. Until then, stay safe, stay inside, and play more games. See ya.